So, have you ever wondered how major software companies actually ensure their apps work before you use them?
Oh, that's such a good question.
Right. Because, like, think about it.
Yeah.
When you click a buy button on your favorite shopping site or, you transfer money in your banking app, how do the developers know that order actually went through?
Yeah,
Do
exactly.
they just have like a human manually clicking that button 1,000 times on 100 different devices every single time they update the code?
I mean, obviously not.
No, obviously not. But then how does a machine verify what a human actually experiences on a screen? So today we're going on a deep dive into the world of automated testing.
It's the huge
It
topic.
really is. Specifically, we're unpacking a comprehensive framework from Playwright Masters on something called Playwright assertions.
Right.
Our mission today is to basically decode how automated testing shifts from just blindly doing things on a web page to actually proving that those things work.
That distinction is so important.
So consider this your shortcut to understanding the invisible backbone of the modern web. By the end of this deep dive, you're going to have a massive aha moment about how machines verify our digital experiences.
It really is a fascinating shift in perspective.
Yeah.
When we use the web, we just take for granted that cause and effect are inherently linked.
Right, totally.
Like we click a mouse, a menu opens, we hit enter, a page loads. But when you are programming a machine to test that software, cause and effect are entirely separate
Oh,
universes.
wow, right?
Yeah, because the machine doesn't have eyes, it doesn't have intuition. You have to explicitly teach it how to recognize the effect of its own actions.
Right.
And that explicit teaching, that's exactly what an assertion is.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because the whole distinction between an action and an assertion, it's basically the whole foundation of how this works. An action is just the test doing something like clicking a login button or, typing in a text box. But an assertion is the test checking that the application actually behaved the way we expected it to after that action took place.
Yes.
So, like, let's say line one of your code is the action. You tell Playwright to click the button named login.
Okay.
Then line two is the assertion. You tell Playwright to check if the dashboard heading is now actually visible on the screen.
And without that second line, your automated test is basically flying blind.
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine an automated script that just opens a website, enters a username, types in a password, clicks login, and then just immediately reports back to the developers, test finished, test passed.
But wait, did the user actually log in?
We have absolutely no idea.
Oh, I see.
All the test proved was that the login button was technically clickable.
Right.
It didn't prove that the backend authenticated the user or that the database accepted the credentials or
The UI actually routed them to the correct dashboard. I was thinking about this earlier, and it says basically like sending someone to the grocery store for milk.
Oh, I like that.
Right.
All right.
So the action is leave the house and go to the store.
Yep.
But the assertion is, did they actually come back with the milk?
Right.
Because if you don't assert the final state, you only know they left the house. You have absolutely no idea if the trip was successful until you literally open the fridge and look inside.
That is a perfect analogy. And Playwright structures this mathematical proof almost like a sentence.
How so?
So the basic syntax of an assertion in this framework is expect actual dot matcher expected.
Okay, so expect actual dot matcher expected.
Right. You are feeding the test runner a specific element, which is the actual current state of the page, and comparing it against your expected state.
Got it.
The code isn't just checking random pixels, it's asking business critical questions like, did the URL change to the secure checkout zone?
Or is the correct error message displayed if the password was wrong? Wait, but before we get to the matchers and what we expect, how does the machine even know what the actual state is? Like, if it doesn't have eyes, how is it looking in the fridge for the milk?
So that brings in the concept of the document object model, or the DOM.
The DOM, right?
When a web page loads, your browser creates this massive structural tree of every piece of text, every image, every button.
Like a giant blueprint.
Yes. And Playwright uses something called a locator to navigate that tree. A locator is basically the code's way of pointing a very specific finger at one element on the screen.
Okay, I follow.
So you give Playwright a locator to find the actual element in the DOM, and then you assert what you expect that element to be doing.
Which brings us to the absolute elephant in the room when it comes to web testing.
Network lag.
The internet is so laggy, it's wildly unpredictable.
Oh, it
Like
can.
sometimes a page loads in 10 milliseconds and sometimes your Wi-Fi hiccups and it takes 4 seconds.
Sure.
So if our test is pointing its finger at the DOM and rigidly asking, is the dashboard there right this exact millisecond?
Mm.
Isn't it just going to fail constantly because of network lag?
And that phenomenon has historically been the absolute nightmare of automated testing.
I can imagine.
The old manual testing tools were strictly sequential. The test would fire off a click and then instantly ask the page, are you visible right now?
And if it wasn't?
The page would return a false because it was still, you know, rendering or waiting on a database query.
Right.
And the test would instantly crash and fail. It was incredibly brittle.
So how do we fix that?
Well, Playwright solves this with what they call web-first assertions. When you write an assertion like expect to be visible, Playwright actually takes total ownership of the waiting process.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because Playwright isn't just blindly pinging the screen over and over, right?
Right.
It has this auto-retry loop built right into the assertion, but it's like way smarter than that.
Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. It hooks directly into the browser's event loop and monitors the network traffic. It literally watches the DOM mutate in real time.
Wow. Real time.
Yeah. So it checks the condition, and if the dashboard isn't ready, it doesn't fail. It just waits a fraction of a millisecond, checks again, waits, checks again, over and over until the condition is satisfied, and then it passes the test.
And it does this dynamically, right? For up to 5 seconds by default?
Exactly. 5 seconds.
But wait, I have to push back on this a little bit.
Okay. Go for it.
If we know a website is slow, or, you know, we know a database query takes a second, why not just tell the test to wait 3 seconds every single time before checking?
Ah, the hard wait.
Yeah. Isn't it just easier to write a command like wait for timeout 3000 and be done with it?
Yeah.
You don't have to hook into any event loops. You just pause the script.
So using arbitrary fixed waits like telling your test to just pause the clock for 3 seconds is considered a cardinal sin in modern automation.
A cardinal sin. Really?
Oh, absolutely. And the math shows why. Let's say your application happens to load very fast on a good day, maybe in 1 second.
Okay.
Your test still sits there doing absolutely nothing, staring at a loaded screen for the remaining 2 seconds.
I mean, sure, but who cares about 2 seconds?
Well, multiply that wasted 2 seconds by a suite of 10,000 automated tests running every time a developer updates code.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, your entire deployment pipeline just ground to a halt. You're wasting hours of compute time.
I see. It scales terribly.
And the inverse is actually even worse.
How so?
What if the server is under heavy load on a Friday afternoon and it takes 4 seconds to respond?
Ah.
Your rigid 3-second wait expires, the test checks the page, the element isn't there yet, and the test fails.
Even though the app is fine?
Exactly. It reports a broken application to the engineering team when, in reality, the application was functioning perfectly fine. It was just a little slow. We call those false alarms flaky tests.
And if an alarm goes off every day when there isn't a fire, people stop listening to the alarm.
That is the real danger. Flaky tests destroy human trust in automation. Developers start ignoring the red X in their deployment pipeline because they just assume, oh, it's just the test being brittle again.
Right.
And that is exactly how catastrophic bugs make it into production. Someone ignores a real failure because it was hidden in a sea of flaky, fixed timeout failures.
That makes so much sense. So web-first assertions fix this entirely because they don't wait for the clock, they wait for the condition.
Yes, precisely.
Like, if the dashboard appears in 200 milliseconds, the test moves on in 200 milliseconds.
Yeah.
If it takes 4.9 seconds, the test dynamically waits 4.9 seconds and still passes.
Which makes your test suite incredibly resilient and blazingly fast.
Okay, so if it's hooked into the event loop, and it's so smart about dynamically waiting for things to happen, what exactly is it looking for? Like, are we just checking if text exists on a page?
Well, the framework provides this massive tool belt of what are called matchers.
Matchers.
Yeah. The most common are locator assertions, which are basically your bread and butter for validating the user interface. We discussed to be visible, but equally important in modern web apps is to be hidden.
To be hidden?
No.
Why would we care if something is hidden?
Think about a complex checkout process. When you submit a credit card payment, a little loading spinner usually appears, right?
Oh, yeah.
You don't just want to know the spinner appeared. You critically need to assert that the spinner eventually disappears, meaning the transaction actually finished processing.
Oh, that's smart.
And there are also matchers, like to be enabled and to be checked, which are vital for verifying that a user can actually interact with the form.
You know, there is a very common point of confusion developers run into here, which is the difference between checking text with to have text versus to contain text.
Yes. People mix those up all the time.
Let me try an analogy to break this down.
I'd love to hear it.
Okay, so to have text is like checking if a box is exactly a shoe.
Yeah.
If there is a shoe and a pair of socks in the box, the test fails. The box must be exactly and only a shoe.
Right.
Whereas to contain text is checking if the box contains a shoe, regardless of whatever else is stuffed in there with it.
That's a great way to put it. So practically speaking, if you are validating an e-commerce order status and you used to have text order confirmed, the HTML element on the page must contain exactly that string and nothing else.
But modern apps are super dynamic.
Exactly. The app might generate something like order confirmed for John on Tuesday. Your tracking number is 555.
And if you use the strict assertion,
your test fails because of all that extra text.
Ah.
So in that dynamic case, you'd use to contain text confirmed. It gives the test the flexibility to find the core truth inside a messy dynamic string.
Okay, we've talked a lot about finding things, but what about when things are supposed to be gone?
What do you mean?
Well, I always get anxious when I enter a wrong password. I fix it, I hit submit, and the site just sits there. How do you prove an error message doesn't show up when I use the right password?
Ah, I see.
Doesn't the test just sit there waiting for 5 seconds for an error message that is never coming?
Not at all. Playwright handles negative assertions beautifully by simply chaining a dot not property to the assertion.
Why not?
Yeah. It looks like expect locator dot not dot to be visible. And because Playwright is hooked into the browser state, it doesn't just blindly wait.
Right.
If the element is already gone or never existed in the DOM in the first place, the dot not dot to be visible assertion resolves and passes instantly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It reverses the logic without penalizing your test speed at all. But, you know, the true power of this tool belt isn't just checking the UI.
It's not.
No, it's the back-end API assertions.
Wait. So it's not just a simulated human clicking around a browser.
Yeah,
it actually talks to the back-end.
It does both. And this is a massive paradigm shift for a lot of engineers. You can use a matcher called to be okay, which verifies that the backend server's HTTP status code is in the successful 200 to 299 range.
That's incredible.
It means you can have two distinct validation layers in a single unified test. In one block of code, you can hit the backend API directly and assert to be okay to prove the database actually created a new user profile.
Yeah.
And then in the very next line of the same test, you assert to be visible on the browser UI to prove the front end successfully fetched that data and rendered the pixels on the screen.
Wow. So you are proving the entire stack works from the depths of the database all the way to the user's eyeballs.
Exactly. It's incredibly powerful.
That is super thorough.
Yeah.
But what if we have a scenario where the back end takes a really long time or, you know, relies on a third party?
Like what?
Like, say I initiate a refund and the application has to talk to an external payment gateway that might take, I don't know, 45 seconds to process.
Yeah.
A 5-second auto wait is going to fail every time in that case.
Right. For those scenarios, what we in the industry call eventually consistent APIs Playwright offers an advanced maneuver called expect.poll.
Expect.poll.
Yep. Instead of checking the browser DOM, polling repeatedly pings a backend function over and over at custom intervals until the result satisfies your assertion.
So you can tell it to poll the payment gateway every 2 seconds for a full minute until it finally returns a refund successful status.
You got it. It's perfect for asynchronous backend processes.
Okay, and there's another advanced tool mentioned alongside polling called expect.toPass. Is that just another way of polling an API?
It's similar in spirit, but different in application. While poll is usually for repeatedly checking a single value or backend endpoint, to pass is for retrying an entire block of complex operations until the whole block succeeds without throwing an error.
Like a retry loop.
Exactly. It's a way to wrap a very unstable multi-step process in a protective retry loop.
Okay, let me throw a wrench into this.
Right on.
Let's say I have a massive enterprise dashboard. There are 20 different financial graphs, user count tables, and revenue widgets, and they are all loading independently.
A classic enterprise nightmare.
Right. Now, if the entire point of a test is to catch failures and sound the alarm, why would I ever want a test to keep running if it finds an error?
What do you mean?
I've seen something called soft assertions, which look like expect.soft, where the test just records a failure and keeps going. That sounds like ignoring a fire alarm.
It totally sounds counterintuitive, right? Until you experience the agonizing reality of debugging a massive dashboard without them.
Okay, paint me a picture.
If you use standard hard assertions on that 20-widget dashboard, your test stops the exact millisecond it finds the very first broken widget.
Right.
So your test runs in the pipeline, it fails on widget number 3, and it immediately starts testing.
Okay, and then?
The developer gets the report, spends an hour fixing widget 3, and runs the massive test suite again. Now, it passes widget 3, but it fails on widget number 7.
Oh, no.
The developer fixes 7, runs it again, and it fails on widget 12.
Mm.
You are trapped in this endless, soul-crushing cycle of run, fail, fix, run.
Oh, wow. You literally never get the full picture of what's broken until you fix everything one by one.
Precisely. But if you use soft assertions for all 20 independent widgets, Playwright checks widget 1, checks 2, notes in the log that widget 3 is broken, keeps going, notes that 7 is broken, and finishes the entire test.
So at the end?
At the end, it hands the developer a single comprehensive report that says, here are all 5 widgets that are broken on this dashboard today. You get the full health report in a single run.
That is a lifesaver.
It is. The caveat, though, is that you should never use soft assertions if a failure makes the next step mathematically unsafe.
Give me an example.
Well, if your login assertion fails, you absolutely must use a hard assertion to stop the test dead in its tracks. There is 0 point in softly checking if the financial dashboard loaded, if the user never actually logged in.
Right, that makes perfect sense. Honestly, giving developers all these tools, auto-weighting, polling, soft assertions, it sounds incredibly powerful. But it also sounds like a recipe for a massive, tangled mess if you aren't careful.
Inevitably, yes. When you are building a professional test suite that might contain 10,000 assertions, framework design is what separates a maintainable engineering project from a total disaster.
You know, one of the coolest features for keeping things clean is custom assertion messages.
Yes, I love those.
You can literally attach a plain English string to your code, like expected. Mm. User should be logged in.
Right.
So when that test fails on a server at 3 a.m., a human developer reading the logs doesn't have to decipher a bunch of cryptic DOM locators and Boolean values.
Mm-hmm.
The log just translates the code back into the underlying business expectation.
And that translation is vital because automation is ultimately about communicating the health of the software to human beings.
Exactly.
But, you know, even the best custom English message won't save you from fundamental architecture mistakes. The most common pitfall when building a framework is relying on bad locators.
Right. Going back to what we discussed earlier about pointing a finger at the DOM,
yeah.
A custom message doesn't save you if you point at the wrong thing. If I tell the test to just target a generic CSS class, like .button, and a designer later adds a help button to the very top of the page, the test might grab the first button it sees.
And suddenly your test fails because it was asserting the state of the new help button instead of the submit button at the bottom of the form.
Wow.
The application is working flawlessly, but your test is broken. A professional framework avoids this by using user-facing locators, like get by role or get by text.
Ah, so you teach the machine to look for things the exact same way a human does.
Exactly, by its accessible name and its role on the screen, not by its invisible CSS styling.
Another pitfall mentioned is broad assertions. It is super tempting to just assert that the entire body of the web page contains the text order confirmed. I mean, why bother finding a specific header when you can just scan the whole page?
Because the body contains absolutely everything. It has sidebars, footers, hidden metadata. It's incredibly unstable. A good professional framework demands precision. Your assertions should be surgical, connected directly to the exact heading or specific widget that proves the business requirement was actually met.
Okay, here is the big one. We talked earlier about the default 5-second timeout for Playwright's auto-retrying assertions.
Yeah.
Now, knowing human nature, I can guarantee that when a developer's test starts failing because a database took 6 seconds to load instead of 5, their first instinct is going to be, I'll just go into the global configuration and crank the timeout up to 20 seconds.
Oh, happens all the time.
Right. If the app is broken, just give it more time to load.
And this brings us to perhaps the most important philosophical question in all of automation. What is the actual purpose of the test?
Okay.
The purpose of a test is not to turn a dashboard green. The purpose is to validate the user experience. If you artificially crank your timeout up to 20 seconds across the board just to make your flaky tests pass, you are actively hiding genuine performance bugs from your company.
You're masking a real issue by making the machine unnaturally patient.
Exactly. If a human user has to stare at a blank screen for 15 seconds waiting for a checkout page to load, they are not going to be patient.
No way.
They're going to abandon their shopping cart and go to a competitor. Your tests should fail at 5 seconds because a 15-second wait is a terrible user experience.
Wow.
The golden rule of assertions is this. Don't make your test guess when something will happen. Make it describe the condition that must eventually be true within a reasonable, human-acceptable time frame.
That is a perfect way to summarize it. Let's bring this all together. Today, we've unpacked how modern testing shifts the paradigm from just making a script blindly click around a web page to actually demanding hard mathematical proof that a digital product works.
It's a huge leap.
We explore the magic of hooking into the event loop, where the test framework dynamically handles network lag instead of forcing the developer to rely on brittle, fixed timeouts.
Right.
We looked at the specific mattress checking, text visibility, polling APIs, and proving full stack health. And we discussed how professional framework design avoids the pitfalls of bad locators and bloated timeouts to ensure our software actually serves the people using it.
It is a truly comprehensive approach. It bridges the massive gap between what the code is technically programmed to do and what the human being actually experiences on the screen.
And for you listening, even if you never write a single line of test code in your entire life, I hope this deep dive changes how you look at the software you interact with every single day.
Absolutely.
The next time you experience a beautifully smooth checkout process or a flawless login sequence, realize that it isn't magic.
Nope.
Behind the scenes, there is an invisible assertion written by a developer hooking into an event loop and waiting exactly 5 seconds to rigorously prove that your experience happened exactly as it was meant to.
It really is the invisible safety net holding the digital world together.
It really is. But before we go, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to ponder. Throughout this entire discussion, we relied heavily on the idea that automated testing requires defining exact predictable outcomes.
Yes.
We use specific text matchers, rigid locators, exact URL paths. We were rapidly entering an era where artificial intelligence is starting to dynamically generate and personalize user interfaces on the fly.
And boy.
Right. If every single user sees a slightly different AI-tailored version of an application, what happens to these tests?
That is the million-dollar question.
How will our strict rule-based assertions cope with software that constantly rewrites itself? Something to think about the next time you log in.